You can't prepare for the storm after the evacuation order has come. In fact, you can't even prepare for the storm when the wind is blowing at 100 miles an hour outside your house. It's way too late by then. You gotta do your storm prep when the sun is still shining on a beautiful day like this. This same analogy applies to marriage and divorce. So many times I talk to guys who have known for 5 years or longer that their marriage was coming to an end. They were sleeping on the couch. They were getting the cold shoulder. The relationship was untenable. It was making them miserable. Their day-to-day lives sucked. And yet, they did nothing. And then, when the inevitable happens, the storm hits, they're surprised. They're like, holy shit, I didn't know I was gonna get a divorce. Like, no, man, it was coming. You could see it. Like, if you had an app on your phone, it would have been blinking red. Warning, warning, warning. Divorce en route. Prepare yourself. Anyway, so today, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about gray divorce. Why you guys need to be prepping for it. Because it's coming, you know? It's coming. This is Life 2.0. Let's talk about it. I find it interesting that sociologists are shocked that the number of people getting divorced, or the percentage of the population getting divorced after age 50, is so high. I don't get it. It should be pretty sensible to figure that people, after they've lived together for a certain period of time, would just get fed up with one another. You know what I mean? After 20 or 30 years, it's like, we gotta do something different. Like, this just isn't working anymore, you know? But the divorce rate for people over age 50 is way higher than it is for the people under age 50. So if you're approaching 50 and you're still married, take a look around. Are there clouds on the horizon? Is there a storm incoming? Are you seeing the telltale signs that something may be happening? What happens after about 20 or 30 years is you find yourself in an empty nest. Ooh. Now for us men, empty nest means like, what was it, Terry Bradshaw in that movie where he made it into his naked room, you know? We take over the kids' rooms, you know? We turn them into our hobby rooms, whatever. For your wife, oh, totally different scenario, man. It's like someone stabbed her. Yeah, she's feeling the pain of that empty nest. It's taking away her purpose. And all she's left with is you. And she's coming to the realization of what her life is going to look like from here on out. It's just going to be you and her. And she was fed up with you a long time ago, my friend. And so now she's thinking option two. What's behind door number two here? Do I have another option to my availability? Can I make a change here? So inevitably, like women do, she's going to seek the counsel of other women. Usually, she's gonna seek out the counsel of another divorced woman because she wants to hear it from the source. What's it like being divorced? Now, women are all very externally validated, and so they don't want to tell people they screwed up. So more often than not, that divorced woman's gonna tell your wife how great it is to be divorced, how great it is to be single, how she took him to the cleaners, how she is living a better life now than she ever could have imagined. And your wife is gonna go, you know something? That sounds like a pretty good option for me. Next thing you know, the winds are blowing at 100 miles an hour outside your house, and that evacuation order is en route. So you better brace yourself, my friend. Most guys in their 40s and 50s are in what I call the Clash Zone. Do you remember that rock group, The Clash, from the 1970s and 80s? So they had a great song called Should I Stay or Should I Go? And that's where you are. You're right in that in-between, that purgatory of should I stay and hope everything works out and somehow she falls back in love with me and she turns into the girl that I loved way back when. And all the negative shit that's happened is going to be swept under the carpet and we're going to live happily ever after, just like in all those romantic comedies and the Disney movies. Is that still a possibility for me? That's the should I stay part of you. And the should I go part of you is the more realistic part. It's like, this bitch is fucking crazy. What the hell am I even doing here? Why is she treating me like that? I do so much for her. I bent over backwards. I've sacrificed my whole life. Why does she treat me like I'm a slave? Why am I suddenly the punching bag around here? That's the should I go guy. Now, as human beings, we have this dichotomy. On the one hand, we identify negativity very quickly because it helps us avoid threats. I think it's a survival mechanism. But on the other hand, emotionally, we're very optimistic. So that's also a natural characteristic of humans. We tend to be optimistic. We're always looking for the opportunities. We're looking to be happy. We want what's best for everyone. So you're fighting between these two biological, psychological extremes. On the one hand, the warning signs are going off. Your survival instincts are telling you you need to get out. On the other hand, that Pollyanna part of you is telling you it's all going to be good. We just need to give her more time. She's going to fall in love with us again. It's all going to be great one day. Just wait and see. Dibu, come back. When you think about it, it's hard to imagine why it is there aren't more gray divorces. I mean, once you've spent 20 or 30 years with the same person, it's pretty tough to make that relationship last. I mean, think about it. You're making this decision usually for this person when you're much less immature, I should say, inexperienced. You don't really know what you're doing with relationships. You don't even know who you are more often than not. Yet you're committing yourself to this relationship probably for reasons that didn't make a lot of sense at the time. Like, she was the prettiest girl. You know, that's not good criteria for judging a life partner. You know what I mean? Well, it's like going to a business deal. Like, you got three or four people who are bidding for your business. And, you know, some of them have better prices. Some of them have better services. Some of them better products. I mean, all that. And then the sales girl walks in and she's super hot. You're like, I'm going with that product. Regardless of what they got standing behind them. It's just like, yeah, the sales girl was really cute. I'm going to go with that one. That's not the way we do business. You wouldn't put your business on the line like that. So why would you put your whole life on the line like that? But this is what we do. And women, they're just as bad. You know, they are desperate to get married. You know, they get into life 1.0 too. And they're not complete until they find a man. Like, all their girlfriends are putting pressure on them when they're in their 20s to settle down, find a man, get on with it, making babies and all that shit. So we're all getting pushed into this, down into this funnel, you know, that is marriage. It's like squeezing us down into this conformity that we need to behave in a certain way to meet society's expectations. And then you throw on top of it this legal agreement that binds you and restricts you and tells you that there are penalties for failure. It's not just that you're with this person that you have chosen under bad conditions, bad circumstances, but also if you don't make this work out, well, you're gonna pay a pretty hefty price. And so when you get 20 to 30 years into a marriage, most people realize that the marriage isn't working. So the divorce rate runs about 50%. And I find these statistics interesting because what they do is they skew these statistics to make them sound less terrible. People who've been married for less than 10 years, their divorce rate isn't quite so bad. It's like only like 30%, you know? And then from 10 to 20 years, it's not so bad either. It's like 35, 40%. But when you get over 20 years and you're like over age 50, oh my God, it goes up to like 60 or 65%. And it's because the clock is ticking, your life is running out, and you are spending it doing something that is not pleasant. You are unhappy. You are unhappy on a day-to-day basis with your life, and yet you continue on with it. And this is what we do. And, you know, I'm talking about this from a man's perspective, but I'm certain this is exactly the same thing that women have. The problem here is that in so many marriages, what's happened is that men have given up their leadership role in so many relationships because of the constant nagging, the constant complaining, you know, and it's just so much easier to just give in to her, to just let her make her own decision, just let her do it. You know, because on the one hand, we think we're being a little bit of a hero because we're granting autonomy to her to run certain aspects of your life. And you're thinking that she's going to be more engaged and more pleased with this outcome. And I think in the short term, that is absolutely right. But in the long term, what ends up happening is you turn into her employee. You turn into a subordinate. She is now completely in charge of the relationship, in charge of the marriage, in charge of the children, in charge of the household, in charge of the budget, in charge of all this stuff. And suddenly you become extraneous to all of it. Like, other than the fact that you're bringing home a paycheck, you're not necessary anymore. And she sees that. And she can also see quite plainly that the court systems give her access to your paycheck anyway. So she doesn't really need you in this operation. She just doesn't. Now, I'm not going to blame guys for this. I mean, this happens. And if you're a young guy and you're getting into a relationship and you're thinking, how do I keep my marriage from going tits up? Well, the way you do it is you maintain your leadership role in the relationship, even though it's a pain in the ass, because you're going to have to make a stand on things that you don't really care about. You're going to have to hold your ground. You're going to have to make her unhappy in the short term. But the outcome in the long term, well, she will be much happier. You can't be a tyrant, so you're going to have to work on that. But you do have to hold your ground. You do have to have very solid boundaries and not be, never give in on those boundaries. You've got to hold them very firmly. But for those of us who grew up back in the 70s and 80s, yeah, we didn't know about that stuff. You know, we were still just benefiting from the sexual revolution. Do you know what I mean? Like, we were just, you know, it just seemed like suddenly the floodgates had opened and there was sex everywhere all the time. Even in the middle of the whole AIDS epidemic, we were still banging. It was unbelievable. You would have thought that we would have stopped, but no, that didn't happen. It was just like a sexopedia. We should have one of those where you just have the whole generation of oversexed people from my generation. But anyway, that kind of leads into relationships that are based on information that is not valid, because we didn't make friends with our girls before we started screwing them. You know, we just screwed them from the very beginning. And once you go that route, well, you're not really in a friendship. You're in an intimate relationship right from the very, very beginning. And that is a terrible way to start a relationship. So if you started your relationship with sex, you don't know very much about her. You feel like you're obligated to be nice to her because you're having sex with her. And if she's really good at it and she's friendly with you and the whole thing, well, now you're on your path to being married. And before you know it, you've got a ring on your finger. You're looking at mortgages. You're, you know, got two cars in the driveway, two kids either en route or already in the house. And your life has been turned over to this algorithm that is dictating the terms of what happens next. And unfortunately, for most guys from my generation who are in their 40s and 50s and 60s now, they are getting divorced. This is what happens. This is part of the algorithm. You're just a product of your generation. And I'm afraid that if you don't see those storm clouds coming, you're going to be caught off guard. If you don't do something when you see those storm clouds coming, you're going to get hammered. You're going to be shocked and you're going to be dismayed by it all. You know, I think there should be like an awards program for married couples, like they have for the Academy Awards and the Golden Globes and the Emmys and all that stuff. We should have like the hubbies, because we play the happy husband better than probably most actors could on the big screen. When you're in a difficult marriage, it's very important that everyone around you, your children, even your wife to a certain extent, but your neighbors, your family, your parents, your brother and sister, your friends, they all think that everything's just fine, you know? And you're just going to be the happy hubby. You're just going along, you know? You're just acting like, yeah, it's no big deal. So I've been sleeping on the couch for a couple of years. I like the couch. The couch is a great place to sleep. It's so much more convenient for me. You know what I mean? I have access to the kitchen. I can stay up late at night. You know, it really works out for the best that I'm sleeping on the couch all the time. Yeah, yeah. That's what we tell ourselves. That's what we tell, you know, when people ask, that it's your choice. It's not an intimacy thing. It's not a marriage thing. This is just the way our lifestyle is. It's just a lifestyle choice. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And all of her nagging, you know, she just knows me so well. I'm okay with that. You know, having her bitch at me every time something goes on, you know, it's okay. Her screaming, you know, it's loving. It's a loving scream. You know, it's really not the vindictive, angry, resentful scream that you think you're hearing. It's more of there's like a lilt at the end that lets you know she loves you. You know, it's like, you asshole. Yeah, you see, you hear that little extra at the end and you know she's putting in the extra effort. It's because she loves you. That's what it is. But we men, we go on, we soldier on, we pretend everything's fine. we pretend that it's all good. We don't want anyone to raise any alarm bells. We don't want to set off a danger signal that might indicate that we're ready for a divorce. And I think part of it is we're convincing ourselves. We're acting so well that we've convinced ourselves that maybe everything really is okay. Like maybe I am really living in this pretend world. Maybe I have been wrong the whole time. Maybe I'm just missing it, you know? Maybe all this crap that I'm telling other people and I'm saying out loud to myself really is true. Maybe that's the case. Well, unfortunately, or fortunately, that is not the case. We do this to ourselves because we don't want to come to terms with the fact that our marriage is failing. We avoid it at all costs. And I've talked about this in other videos, but I'm going to mention it here. Change is the force of nature that causes the strongest men to hide and curl up like little babies, you know? The idea that their lives will change sends them into tremors of fear. And the potential for loss of control and stepping out into the abyss, not knowing what comes next, is the scariest thing that we face. And the idea that we would be at that precipice, not knowing what comes next in our lives, following a divorce, keeps us frozen in place in relationships that suck, that destroy us from the inside out, that make our lives miserable, that tear down our self-esteem, that emasculate us at every turn, that make us wish sometimes that we never got married to begin with, like you wish you had never even met her. But we stay, because despite all of that, the fear, the perceived fear that we have of what comes next freezes us, makes us stop and say, what's worse, the pain that I know or the pain that I don't know? And that is the problem. A big part of it is because we have bought into the algorithm of Life 1.0, the story that society tells us about how we must behave in order to be on track, to be accepted, to be fulfilling our role, to be doing the right things. And unfortunately, when I talk about society, it does not just some vague something out there. It's the people that we have in our lives. Our parents, our clergy, our coaches, our teachers. All of these people have led us down this path and made us believe that if we followed these steps, that we would inevitably lead ourselves to the great American dream of happiness, prosperity, and serenity in our lives. And the unfortunate truth is, most of those people who were giving us this information were not experiencing that in their own lives. Most of these people were probably passing this information on to you just like it was passed on to them, you know? Part of it is you have to go back a few generations. You go back 3 or 4 generations, maybe 5 generations, and men and women were like in a foxhole because life required that they work together to survive. Survival was the primary mission. Whether or not they were attracted to one another, whether or not they got along really great, was secondary to the fact that they both needed to survive. And if you've ever been in a really stressful situation with a guy, or a girl, or anyone else, you know how that can kind of bring you together, even bring people together that probably would not normally get together, you know? I would imagine that these guys in Ukraine fighting in that war, they probably get to be pretty tight in those foxholes. You know, they're depending on one another to watch their backs. They may not be friends in the normal world. You know, out there in the real world where they're free to do whatever they want, they probably don't have a lot in common with each other. They probably would be, strangers. But here they are in these foxholes fighting for their lives, and they become best friends. And the reason why they become best friends is because their survival is at stake. And that's what happened way back in the old days with marriage. Survival was the critical factor. And so people made the best of it, you know? Like I said earlier, there's an optimistic part of us that wants to everything to be good, everything to be fine. Debo! There he is. But now we're no longer faced with that survival threat, you know? We can make it on our own individually. Women don't need men to provide for them. And men don't need women for intimacy. So the whole transactional nature of the traditional relationship has broken down. You know, men can get sex almost anytime, any place. I mean, there, it's everywhere. Hell, if not, you've got the internet. I mean, you can manage yourself if you need to. Women are doing just fine, getting jobs. They're going to school. They're getting skills. They're making money. They can buy houses. They don't even need us, you know. Hell, they can get sperm bank stuff. You know, they can have their own family without us at all. So the requirement that we get together is not the same as it was a few generations ago. And without that external pressure pushing us together, well, there's really no reason for us to be together anymore, you know? So when you go back and look at your great-great-great-grandmother and grandfather and how they stayed together for 50 or 60 years, well, they probably were fighting for their lives for most of that time. And then when they finally got to a place where they were financially capable of feeling like they were insulated against the threats, they were too worn out to look for someone else. It's like, okay. Plus, they didn't have dating apps. So, you know, it's like, I might as well just stay with the one I know. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just going to ride this out. I'm already in my 50s. Back then, they only lived to be 65 or so. So, like, screw it. Why blow it up now, you know? Well, we're living a lot longer these days, and we don't have all those constraints on us as they did back in those days. So, at age 50, that's sort of like the critical day, you know, on your 50th birthday. Don't be surprised if you get a birthday card and a summons to appear in court, let you know you're getting divorced. You get served with papers on your birthday. If you don't get it on your birthday, you're going to get it soon after. Because here's the thing. Even though the overall divorce rate is only 50%, those people getting divorced after age 50 is a bit higher than that. But think about those people who don't get divorced, you know? There's a lot of them that are staying together for all the wrong reasons, and they're suffering. They're painstakingly pretending day in and day out that this is okay, that this terrible situation is all right, and it's just not. I was going to make an argument today that the entire institution of marriage is an anachronism. It doesn't belong in modern society at all. I think that there are lots of reasons I can point to suggest that it doesn't make any sense, at least based on the way we have established it currently. I think that we might be able to reimagine marriage into something else, but the current form that it's in needs to change significantly in order for it to meet the needs of the people who are interested in having those kinds of relationships and raising families. But for us who have already done it, we've already in there, it's too late. So what are you going to do? You're 50 years old. You've been sleeping on the couch. You're not getting any intimacy. Your wife treats you like a piece of furniture, one that she wants to throw out at some point. The storm clouds are on the horizon. The wind isn't blowing yet, but you know it's coming. Why wait? Why wait? The time to prep is now. Get your act together. Talk to a lawyer. Figure it out. Don't allow this thing to metastasize to the point where it eats you alive, because it will. Because if you don't take some kind of action when you're prepared and you're making all the arrangements, the likelihood that she will is pretty, pretty high. Now, I know you guys are thinking, well, I don't want to lose my money. Well, that's already gone, my friend. I mean, unless she passes away or she just disappears one day. Not that I'm suggesting that. I'm not suggesting anything. Just want to be clear. I'm going to be a party to a crime. But, yeah, she's already got all that. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of when, you know? And the longer you wait, the more money is going to be. So you might as well do it now. And if your kids are grown, hey, you know, they don't care. They truly don't. They're all wrapped up in their own lives. The best thing you can do is just try to ease the conversation. You see, if you take a leadership role in a divorce, you can set the tone. It does not have to be an adversarial thing. It can be a transitional thing. And what I mean by that is, rather than fighting over everything and getting lawyers involved, you can take another path that just comes to terms with the fact that things aren't working and you all both know it. And you can still like each other or even love each other and realize that this isn't working. You know, living together and trying to carve out a life with two different personalities under the same roof is a hard thing to do. And if you didn't make all the right decisions early on in the relationship and who you chose, there's a really strong chance that you're with someone who you're just incompatible with on some very deep level. So just don't fight it. Just let it go. Take the leadership role and start the ball rolling and get that divorce lined up before that storm hits you. So that when you come to her with it, you can break it in a under conditions that are calm and removes the potential for explosive reactivity, you know? Because that's where divorces really go wrong, is when it becomes a finger-pointing contest. You did this, you did this, you did that, whatever. And then she's pointing back at you, and now you guys are just in a fight, and then it becomes a pissing contest. I'm gonna hurt you, I'm gonna financially beat you up, I'm gonna get the best lawyer in town. And now you're in a Category 5 hurricane fighting for your life, you know? And you can avoid that by taking control of the situation when you recognize that things are not working and take steps toward removing, you know, toward a divorce. You may have to go to some marriage counseling. I know it sucks, but sometimes doing that is the preparation for the divorce. Because more often than not, when you get in front of a good marriage counselor, hey, no, stop. Dibu, come. I don't know what Dibu was chasing there. I thought I saw a dog come down, and then it just gone. I hear there's people at the top of the hill, so maybe that's what it is. But if you're knowing that your marriage is over and just hasn't come to that actual end yet, take control of it, take a leadership role, hire a counselor, go through the motions. You're gonna have to, see if you can salvage the marriage. It might be that the counseling will work. It's possible. I'm not gonna discount that. It's certainly possible. But if it doesn't, you're gonna have a third party there, and you're both gonna be there as well, and you're gonna see that your differences are irreconcilable. And if that's the case, then easing into the transition of divorce will be much, much easier than having a reactive, explosive experience. So I strongly suggest that you take the leadership role. Don't allow her to do it. Because if you put her in control of this, her emotions are gonna be high. She's gonna be trying to rationalize it. She's gonna be telling you all the things that you did wrong. Because here's what it is that's going on inside her head. She doesn't want to be the one in charge. She doesn't want to be the one calling these shots. It makes her extremely uncomfortable. And despite all of her anger and her outward aggression towards you, there is some empathy and compassion that she has for you, and she does not want to hurt you on one level, but on the other level, she doesn't want to continue living with you. So she's gonna have to bite the bullet and be a bitch in order to push you out and to make you not want to be with her anymore. She's gonna do everything she can to eliminate any chances of the relationship being reconciled. She does not want that. She just wants you to go. And when she's in that frame of mind, frequently it ends up being extremely emotional, and she's unstable, and she's gonna be expressing a lot of anger over the situation. And then things just go downhill. You know, it's not gonna be good. So be the man, step up to the plate, do what's necessary, put this marriage out of its misery. There is no point in keeping this thing on life support any longer. I think one of the most difficult things it is for guys to come to terms with is understanding how valuable divorce is, especially at this stage in your life. It does a whole bunch of stuff. Number one, it gets you free of a bad relationship and a bad lifestyle that wasn't serving you, wasn't serving her, wasn't serving anyone. Number two, it allows you to wipe the slate clean and start your life over again and start aiming your life in the direction that you genuinely, authentically want to go. Number three, it serves as an enormous mirror that you can hold up to yourself and say, where do I have room for improvement? Where are my opportunities to become a better man? Because even though there's a lot of reasons why divorces happen, inevitably there are shortcomings that you expressed on the way to this. Like, you were not just a victim here. She may have been terrible, but you probably had your shortcomings too. And getting the opportunity to identify them and address them is crazy valuable, you know? Because you don't want to go through life being that guy, you know? If too many guys come out of one marriage and go right into another one without ever doing the work to figure out what went wrong, why did this happen? I would say that you probably need at least a few years, maybe even a decade between marriages, just to reflect on what went wrong in the first one, you know? Because there's a lot there. And you don't want to continue being that guy. The next thing is rediscovering yourself. And I know that sounds kind of airy-fairy, but it really is something. When you just find your own thoughts in your own head all the time. And if you're married right now, you don't probably know exactly what I'm talking about. Once you remove your wife from your presence and she's out of your life altogether, you stop hearing her voice in your head. I can't remember what that song was, but you know, you are already the voice in my head. I don't know if that was the, I can't remember who sang that song, but whenever that comes on, that reminds me of when I was married, and it seemed like before I made any decisions, I had to run it by the voice. Like the voice in my head that was really her voice, I had to review it, you know what I mean? And it felt like it was always there judging me, always giving me direction, always making decisions. And once that voice is gone and you're left with only your own voice in your head, oh my God, it's like a whole new world. It's like I suddenly feel like a complete human being. And the irony here is that so many guys get married because they feel incomplete without a woman in their lives. And the truth of the matter is, once you get a woman out of your life, now you're complete. She's actually the reason why you're not complete, you know? All you're doing with a woman is you're like trying to put some spackling over a giant hole. It doesn't hold. It doesn't last long. It doesn't have any structure to it. Yeah, if you've got some giant holes in your psyche, in your world, in your belief system of who you are as a man, woman ain't gonna fix that. It's not gonna make it any better. And having her there is just gonna make things so much worse, because that hole is still not filled. It just looks like it's filled, but there's still a giant hole there. And you can't figure out why, because you keep looking at that spot on the wall saying, it looks like it's fine. Everything seems fine from the outside. But the truth of the matter is, it's still broken. And once she's gone, out of your life, you can, that spackling is off the wall, you can go back and fix it the right way, you know? And that's kind of what it's like when you get divorced. So I guess my message to you guys here is, don't be afraid. You know, I make it dramatic, standing on the abyss, you know, staring under the abyss, standing on the precipice, staring under the abyss of darkness. That's what we perceive divorce is going to be. It's not. You know, it's just one day at a time, just like it is now. Except that now, instead of having her telling you what to do and where to go and how to do it and judging everything that you do and giving you negative feedback all the time, she's not going to be there anymore. And so now you're going to have to be responsible for yourself. And maybe there's a little bit of fear there, you know. But you certainly don't need to have her in your life for you to figure out how to live a complete, fulfilling, authentic life that feels 100% you, you know, where you are autonomous, you are authentic, and you're independent, and you feel like you can achieve the things that you want for yourself. Probably the hardest thing at this point is going to be deciding the direction that you want to go. That's going to be the toughest job. It's like, okay, what do I want to do now? That's, how am I going to fill my time? What would be fun? What would be fun for me to try? That's going to be your biggest challenge. All right, you guys, that's all I got for you today. I hope you've enjoyed this video. If you have, please like and subscribe. If you know someone who would benefit from it, please share it with them. Till next time, stay healthy, and if you can, stay single.